Now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And Father Sky says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. Creatures say, take good care of us. Please do not hurt us. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And we are here to be ourselves, to be with one another, to be with our surroundings, to be. And we are here to take care of ourselves, to take care of one another, to take care of our surroundings, take care. Anila nijane go shabotya, nijane go shabotya. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo.
Great greetings. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kitishi Native American Center. We are broadcasting on RFPI, Radio for Peace International, Global Community Radio. Akwe, welcome. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. Wolf Mountain Radio focuses on protecting Mother Earth, defending native lands and indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native people throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Please listen now to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Ho, Kanawatakwasin, to all of our relations.
Hey!
a traditional round dance song from the drum Big Bear off their Turtle Island Music CD, Round Dance Style. Ashkwe, greetings and hello everyone. Welcome to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. In today's program, we share a conversation I had with youth activist Adrian Butera. Adrian was a participant and workshop presenter at the 2005 Immokalee Centro. Yacht Kiddushi Native Center had the honor to participate in a very special gathering of youth activists from all across the country who came together to share ideas and experiences in the pursuit of what I term Earth Justice. Earth Justice incorporates social, economic, cultural, and environmental concerns dealing with the growing threat of globalization. Globalization is the 21st century's form of colonialism. The gathering, which was held August 1st through the 7th, 2005, was titled Encuentro, from the Spanish term for meeting, gathering, or encounter. Hosted by the National Student Farmworker Alliance, SFA, in support of the Coalition of Immokalee Workers, CIW, young activists met in an atmosphere of trust, equality, and solidarity in order to continue to build this youth movement for global justice. The Encuentro took place in one of the poorest communities in America, the town of Immokalee, Florida, located just 15 minutes from us here at Yacht Kiddushi Native Center. Immokalee is one of the battlegrounds for poor people's social and economic justice. The oppression and exploitation faced by Immokalee farm workers over the years in the agricultural industry has been nothing less than modern-day slavery. The organizing and resistance work of the Coalition of Immokalee Workers, such as the recent precedent-setting victory in the Yum Brands Taco Bell boycott, is a significant achievement in the struggle for worker rights to fair wages and decent working conditions. Listeners to Wolf Mountain Radio know that Yacht Kiddushi Native Center has been and continues to be an ally to the Coalition of Immokalee Workers, our neighbors, since CIW's founding. Wolf Mountain Radio is proud to have provided continual coverage of CIW's struggles over the years to our worldwide listeners. Those of us who have participated in the coalition campaigns and marches know that the fight for justice is far from over. This is why the Encuentro was so important. The Immokalee Encuentro brought focus for strategies and next phases of building alliances and movement networks for global justice and for continuing to support the Coalition of Immokalee Workers. The Immokalee Encuentro of student and youth activists and organizers who came together to share skills, knowledge, and experience was truly a committed, diverse, and talented group. I was very honored to attend. The way in which the dialogue took place was very special. Event organizers, trainers, and participants were careful to ensure equality and respect for all, being very open to issues of power dynamics, such as racism, gender, sexism, economic status, class privilege, and white supremacy. It takes great effort to listen and make agreements based on inclusion, consent, and consensus. In Indigenous people's culture, we follow a traditional council circle way of gathering, using the Galuska Watanabe talking stick or talking feather. In this way, all have respect for each other and listen carefully to each other without bias or judgment. This ethic encourages everyone to consider how one's words and actions will impact the well-being of all life for seven future generations. This Student Farmworker Alliance Youth Conference should be proud of how everyone worked together. It is a lesson many so-called adults should emulate. I want to share a paragraph from the Encuentro booklet entitled, quote, Listen and Build. Quote, we envision a space in which all voices are heard, seeing, and hearing one another in our full humanity, where everyone feels comfortable to contribute and barriers between experts and audience are broken down. It's also extremely important that we confront the power hierarchies that we observe amongst and within ourselves and oppressive attitudes and behaviors we have internalized and continue to perpetuate even as activists, unquote. The week-long Immokalee Encuentro operated on a consensus-based model, trying to be non-hierarchical, making sure everyone's voice and concerns were heard, while also promoting group cohesion and participation. In the spirit of the Indigenous Zapatista movement in Chiapas, The Student Farm Worker Alliance and Central participants believe in direct action and direct democracy, where people and communities act through their own power to control and change their own lives without representatives. That oppressions must be confronted both within and outside of our movements, and that only fundamental systemic changes will lead to real justice, liberation, and peace. The range of workshops and training, seriousness of the dialogue strategy sessions, and the cultural music presentations made this gathering both very special and very empowering. I want to thank everyone who participated in the Incentro and truly hope that our grassroots gathering helped to contribute to creating a new and better world for all life, for all of our relations, Kanaan Wantoquesans. I hope the voices you hear from my interviews at the Incentro exemplify this introductory commentary. Adrian Butero, a youth activist, is with the Washington, D.C.-based organization Committee of Indigenous Solidarity, D.C. Zapatistas. The CIS D.C. Zapatistas is an activist group committed to the ongoing struggles of indigenous peoples in the Americas. Committee of Indigenous Solidarity is actively supporting the struggles of indigenous peoples of Mexico, and they also work to combat related structures of oppression within our own communities here in what is now called the United States. Having had the opportunity to talk with Adrian during the week-long Incentro, I know that he and the CIS DC Zapatistas share the same respect as we of Yad Kiddushi Native Center do for indigenous peoples and principles of what I call cultural democracy and self-determination, as exemplified by the Indians of Chiapas. Principles of dignity, justice, respect, inclusiveness, equality, and collective decision-making. The EZLN Zapatista movement of indigenous Maya, Tetzal, Toljol, Tetzotzil, Choi, and Mon peoples of Chiapas was not some new revolutionary political party, but is a traditional native cultural belief of tribal or communal well-being of the entire community. Community in the indigenous context includes all life, not just the human beings. It is an earth-based spiritual connection of the people and the land. Part of the reason of the so-called 1994 Indian uprising in Chiapas was due to the desecration of tribal lands from so-called development. The Mexican government, along with national and multinational companies, were undertaking further agricultural, energy, and logging activities, which only continued the historical rape of the land and poverty of the people. As is the case of many poor and indigenous peoples throughout the world, the Indians of Chiapas had little, if any, representation or involvement in the national government who was controlling their lands and lives. The beauty of the Zapatista movement was that the indigenous peoples themselves determined their resistance and undertook community building in their own way, imagining a better world for the benefit of everyone. The Zapatista expression, todo para todos, nada para nosotros, everything for everyone, nothing for ourselves, exemplifies the purpose of struggle for justice and equality for all. The Zapatista expression, ya basta, or enough, exemplified more than the contemporary issues faced by indigenous and the poor. Ya basta also referred to the more than 500 years of suffering from colonization. Now, in the 21st century, it is called globalization. The first declaration put forth by the indigenous peoples of Chiapas through a Zapatista's communique included a number of demands. These included land, democracy, justice, peace, independence, food, health care, housing, education, and work. Are these not universal human rights? As most listeners to Wolf Mountain Radio know, this declaration occurred during the implementation time of NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement. As we all know, NAFTA is an economic bomb that will further impact the indigenous and poor of the Americas. At the 2005 Immokalee Incentro, Adrian Butiero presented a workshop focusing on war and empire. He was nice enough to invite me as a co-speaker in the workshop, where I shared my views on this topic from an indigenous perspective. Before we listen to my interview with Adrian, I again want to thank everyone from the 2005 Immokalee Student Farm Worker Alliance for organizing this great Incentro. I now welcome Mr. Adrian Butiero to Wolf Mountain Native Radio.
My name is Adrian Boutureira. I work with the Committee of Indigenous Solidarity, Washington, D.C., Zapatistas. The main objective of our organization is to basically work in a reciprocal, respectful relationship with our compañeros in Chiapas, with the Zapatistas. We've been doing that since 1994, facilitating whatever dialogue we can between the communities in resistance and our own communities in the Virginia, Maryland, and Washington, D.C. area. And we're also working, we're a small organization, so we're working in whatever capacity we can to support struggles of our indigenous compañeros in our region. That's the Piscataway tribe, led by our brother, Chief Tayac, Bill Tayac, Red Wing. And we also have worked in the past with the compañeros, the Western Shoshone, who have been struggling for a long time to retain their territorial rights in Nevada. We worked with the Salvadorian indigenous people who have been denied to even identify themselves as indigenous. And in our own capacity, we try to serve whatever solidarity we can to our indigenous comrades.
Thank you. A few years ago, there was some media coverage with Comandante Marcos and the so-called peace talks between the government of Mexico and the indigenous peoples there. What is the current situation, and have the peace talks pretty much been stopped, and is there a renewed war on the part of the government of Mexico?
No. Presently, the peace talks generated a process called the San Andrés Accords. Under the San Andrés Accords, the Mexican government made a commitment to honor a series of demands that had been made by the Zapatistas. These demands included the recognition of their constitutional right to self-determination as an autonomy as indigenous people, the consolidation of their territories within the Mexican Republic, investment by the Mexican government in community-based development, and various different, very accessible points. The COCOPA was the mechanism under which these things were going to be implemented, and it was the mediating voice created for the dialogue. The accords were signed, but never implemented. After several attempts by the Zapatista leadership to call the Mexican government to affirm the San Andrés Accords, the Mexican government passed a series of resolutions instead of, most of which were like a direct insult to what the accords have been. They were watered down, washed down, and actually even directly counterproductive. In light of this, the Zapatistas continue to organize their political base and continue to develop the cohesiveness necessary to empower people at the community level, which was already in process. 2003, I believe, the Zapatistas proceeded to implement the principles of the San Andrés Accords unilaterally. What that has meant is that they have created the Juntas de Buen Gobierno, the Councils of Good Government, and they're called the Caracoles, the snails, because of the shape that the snails have, in which there is, you know, many curvatures that lead into the center. It is traditional Mayan imagery relating to the center that emanates onto the hall. So the Caracoles, which are five, are representative of the five municipalities that are in struggle. And the Councils of Good Government have been created in order to promote and advance and consolidate the civil society's leadership over the autonomous regions where the Zapatistas exist. Furthermore, they have also been created in order to prevent disproportionate distribution of solidarity assistance of all sorts. One of the problems that was happening prior to the formation of the Caracoles as an administrative, cohesive body of the Zapatista communities was that solidarity work was taking place piecemeal, and there was no cohesiveness. Communities that were closer to the road, for instance, were benefiting much more than those that were like a couple of miles inside the jungle. And that was creating huge gaps and inequality, and was basically beginning to generate a conflict within the vision of Zapatismo as a cohesive, collective, communal effort towards a better tomorrow. Ever since then, it has created a lot more cohesiveness. There is a series of taxes that have been imposed on communities that are receiving, for instance, monetary monetary assistance. 13% of that needs to go to the collective pot in order to reinvest onto other collectives.
Yes.
So presently there is the low intensity warfare has not disappeared. The encirclement of the communities, harassment, the reforming of the right wing paramilitaries and intimidation tactics.
Are there still checkpoints and so-called civilian patrols?
Yes, yes, indeed. There hasn't been really a dismantling of those military outposts that was part of the agreement as well. Most recently, the Zapatistas had their sixth declaration from the Lacandon jungle, in which some very significant declarations have been made. First and foremost, the Zapatistas have called for the rest of Mexican civil society to join the Zapatistas in an effort to consolidate the forces of national resistance that are working outside of the traditional parties. They have called for this movement to be composed of not just indigenous people, but to include student movements, worker movements, peasant movements. Not in to the exclusion, but in order to expand the component of resistance to a corrupt political system that continues to promise a change that will never happen, including the PRD, which is the el Partido Revolucionario Democrático, the Revolutionary Democratic Party, which traditionally has been the leftist party, but the Zapatistas don't recognize the PRD as any viable alternative, that the only alternative is going to be the continuation and the increment of the civil society infrastructures that are going to shift the power paradigm from the bottom up. They have also called for they have also made a commitment to send representatives of the ECLN, that's the Zapatista Liberation Army, to talk to anybody who wants to talk to them anywhere in Mexico. It is critical to point out that they're sending representatives of this ECLN and not the clandestine Indigenous Revolutionary Council. So they're sending their army people. And this is not in order to advance armed guerrilla, but I think in order to advance strategies of resistance. They have also called for a rewriting of the Mexican Constitution, in which the rights of people are truly protected.
When the spring comes again to Big Mountain, the Hopi again plant their crops, and the Diné again herd their sheep out into the meadows and the hills as we have done since before the whites came. Since long before there were laws written down in books and enforced with weapons of steel. My grandmother told me that Big Mountain is the home of the one who created humans, where the wind breathes life into the air, where the tree of life was planted and is nurtured. The people live on the land, and the land holds the people. It holds our present, our past, and our future as well. It holds our stories, our songs, and the bones of our ancestors. It is where we have buried the umbilical cords of our newborns, an eternal bond to the earth. The people say that to move away from the land would be to disappear and never to be heard from again. But beneath the soil, the land holds other treasures. To the big corporations like the Peabody Coal Company, the U.S. Congress, the Bureau of Indian Affairs, the Mormon Church, the military leaders who can once again order the guns against our peoples. The Peabody Coal Company tears the skin from the land of the poor whites in Appalachia to strip for the treasure of coal. If they would do that to their own people, how much more eagerly would they do it to the land of the Indians? They have a law, a new law, to add to the thousands of old laws, and this one may be the worst of all, because it is aimed at the heart of the people. Public Law 93531 says that we are to leave our land, to leave Big Mountain. They say that we must relocate, that we must sell our herds of sheep, the herds of our great-great-grandmothers. They say there is to be no more construction on our lands. They say we must be gone by July 7th of 1986, or we must face the guns of the National Guard. But to move away means to disappear and never be heard from again. In 1890, 300 unarmed Lakota Indians were massacred in South Dakota at a place called Wounded Knee, and the memory lives in the land. In 1973, 300 militant members of the American Indian Movement occupied a part of the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota at a place called Wounded Knee, and the memory is a part of the land. The Cherokee in the Trail of Tears, the Cheyenne in the Long Walk, and the massacres on the Pahasapa and at Pine Bluff, the uprisings of Crazy Horse and of Sitting Bull, the countless thousands murdered with bullets, with smallpox blankets, with broken promises and broken treaties. The memories of all of these are a part of the land and live today again at Big Mountain. They say that among the Palestinians, the people do not say, "How are you?" but rather, "How is the land?" And 3 million Palestinians live for the day of return. In South Africa, 23 million black people live on 13% of the land, and the poorest land at that. Because 4 million whites claim the rest for themselves and all the wealth beneath it. In Puerto Rico, the land is defiled by the chemical and pharmaceutical companies and by the U.S. military bases. And as with Native women, one-third of the Puerto Rican women have been sterilized. But the land remembers the people and waits for them, and the waiting will not take forever. The people at Big Mountain have not moved away. We have not disappeared. We have chased off the federal work crews trying to finish the fence that would separate the Hopi from Diné. We are constructing a resistance encampment. We are being joined by AIM warriors and Indian activists from all nations. Every people must decide what it is they will fight for, what is most important for them to survive as a people. The Palestinians and South Africans and Puerto Ricans fight for their land, as do the people of Appalachia, and those in the cities without land fight for what they need to survive, for jobs and housing and food, for justice and for dignity. The Diné and Hopi fight for Big Mountain, to hold it from Peabody Coal Company and from the National Guard, to hold on to our past and to defend our future. July 6th is the culmination, the last ceremony in a 4-year cycle to prepare for war. Big Mountain is Wounded Knee. It is the Forest Sun Dance. It is the Trail of Tears and the Long Walk. It is Plymouth Rock. It is the native villages of Guatemala and the fishing villages of the Puget Sound. It is a long and mighty river that is always flowing. And as more people learn of this struggle, it will be strengthened, as a river is strengthened by all the many streams that flow into it on its way to the sea. The Diné and Hopi will not move away. We will not disappear, and we will be supported in our resistance.
You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yad Kiddushi Native Center. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. The song you just heard was recorded in the 1980s from the All People Singers entitled Song of Big Mountain. The lyrics exemplifies the many serious situations facing indigenous and poor peoples throughout the world who are struggling for self-determination and protection of their sacred homelands from political, economic, cultural, and environmental colonialism. I featured this song as a tribute to today's program guest, Mr. Adrian Butiero, a youth activist fighting globalization. We are here together at the First National Student Farmworker Alliance, Immokalee and Centro. Adrian is with the grassroots group Committee of Indigenous Solidarity, D.C. Zapatistas. His organization supports the struggles of indigenous peoples of Mexico, and we are talking about the historic Zapatista movement. Adrian, one important aspect of the movement in Chiapas relates to environmental injustice, namely how the government of Mexico, in partnership with national and transnational corporations, are raping the land in order to exploit energy and natural resources, mining for gold and other minerals, oil and gas development, logging, and expansion of agribusiness in the form of plantation farming and corporate ranching are examples of so-called development that has greatly impacted the peoples and land of Chiapas. Would you please comment on the environmental injustice which the Zapatistas are fighting against?
Yeah, there is a huge onslaught of gold mining, exploration and exploitation, but not just gold, but all sorts of minerals. As we all know, mining is one of the most dangerous and devastating processes, particularly gold mining, where there needs to be the utilization of certain heavy metals to treat the gold on site in order to transport it. And usually that has in the past ending up on streams and delicate ecosystems completely damaged for decades by this waste that is produced in the mining. One of the biggest onslaughts, which is being called the new gold frontier, is in the state of Chihuahua, in the Sierra Tarahumara, you know, named after the indigenous people who inhabited the Tarahumara Indians, indigenous peoples. And the onslaught of gold mining there by Canadian and multinational corporations such as like GAMIS, which is GAMIS Corporation has been able to put the company out of the red and into one of its most profitable stages of growth because of their mines in the Tarahumara lands. This onslaught is not an accident. The onslaught comes at the heels of constitutional reforms that Mexico was forced to make in order to be entering into NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement. The requirements were that the government needed to dismantle the traditional way in which land was held. Mexico, because of the revolution of 1910 and the constitution of 1917, had one of the most progressive land tenure laws in the hemisphere, if not the world. And what that meant is that the lands, communities, had joint trust of land that was for the community's use, that could not be sold or mortgaged. And that land was always there as a security blanket for the community. And thus, we never really saw the kind of hunger that one sees in Guatemala or El Salvador or all the countries in the region, in Mexico. Because no matter what, small farmer communities and indigenous communities always had the capacity to utilize these lands for the common good. So you always had your plot of land on which you can grow your corn, from which you can like make your tortillas. And the government on top of that was obligated to facilitate your community-based agriculture at that level. Very, very progressive. Well, of course, American corporations and Canadian corporations were not going to have any of that, because access to land is what they need in order to exploit, to build factories, to build industrial farms, and to do biogenetic engineering of trees and everything else that they need. So, lo and behold, Salinas, the then president, puppet corporate stooge of Mexico, pushes legislation that basically ends the system of ejidos, which, I'm sorry, I should have identified what the system was called earlier. It's called the ejidos. The system of ejidos abolished, it's open season. And also, along with the dismantling of the collectively owned system called the ejidos, came a loosening of laws that limited foreign ownership of Mexican land. What that means is that GAMIS Corporation out of Canada, International Gold Mining Corporation, can now buy 1,000 acres of land and put a fence around it, and it's private property, and they go to town and they make they can rape and pillage Mother Earth at their leisure. These are like isolated regions of the country with often maybe the corrupt politicians in power, a couple of $1,000, and there's nobody going to be paying attention to why all the fish are going belly up in the local creek. So there is, it's a crisis. This is not only happening in Chihuahua, but this is also happening elsewhere, in Chiapas as well. The obstacle in Chiapas being a little greater because the Zapatistas are not going to allow for that to happen in their territory. Thus, the chairman of Citibank, about a year or two ago, having said that if Mexico is real serious about foreign investment, they were going to have to solve the Zapatista problem.
Of our birth, how can we stand aside and watch the rape of the world and steel. no glory, no honor. In what results from the rape of the world, mother of us all, place of our birth.
Thank you. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yatkidishi Native Center. Yatkidishi's Wolf Mountain Radio is an independent indigenous media service. Our award-winning program, Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and defend the traditional cultural lifeways of Native peoples around the world. Wolf Mountain Radio presents the situations facing Native lands and tribal communities with news, interviews, commentaries, music, and investigative reports. Estás escuchando el programa de radio Wolf Mountain, honrando a la Tierra Madre y voces indígenas, una producción del Centro Nativo Yatkidishi. La radio Wolf Mountain de Yatkidishi es un servicio de medios independientes indígena. Nuestro programa, honrando a la Tierra Madre y voces indígenas, sirve para proteger la Tierra Madre Sagrada y defender las culturas tradicionales de gente nativa en todo el mundo. La radio Wolf Mountain presenta las situaciones enfrentadas por tierras nativas y comunidades indígenas con noticias, entrevistas, comentarios, música y reportes investigativos.
The music you heard prior to our Yatkidishi Native Center program identification was a beautiful song from the band Son del Centro, entitled Pescador de Tiburón, the Shark Fisherman. Son del Centro are Chicano-Chicana youth activists who perform San Jeraco music as a way to build community and support social justice issues, as they did by performing at the 2005 Immokalee Centro. I hope many of you listeners have heard my two-part interview with Son del Centro entitled Music as Resistance. We also featured African-American singer-songwriter Tracy Chapman's song entitled The Rape of the World, off her CD entitled New Beginnings. I had the honor to become friends with Tracy in the mid-1980s in Boston, Mass., when we at Wolf Mountain Native Radio co-sponsored a number of peace and justice benefit events where Tracy Chapman performed, such as concerts to free Nelson Mandela, Leonard Peltier, the Western Shoshone Nui Sogabia struggle, and the Big Mountain Dene Hopi situation as examples. Well, dear friends, we're nearing the end of our broadcast time together for this edition of Wolf Mountain Native Radio. Next week, we shall continue my conversation with Adrian in part two of our interview. We now conclude our program with an honor song to Menominee Sister Ingrid Washinawatok, who, along with Terence Freitas and Lahani Gay, in 1999, were murdered in what's now called Northeast Columbia, the traditional homeland of the Uwa Native people, where these three warriors were assisting the Uwa defend their territory from oil companies raping their sacred land and waters. The song is from Native American flutist Mary Youngblood, off her Silverwave record CD entitled Heart of the World. The title of the song is Song for Ingrid. Until the next Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, this is your host and producer Ones Pritzker. Aho, Kinon Wintakwasin, to all of our relations.
Galuyage Galuyage
you.